This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition today. We're beginning, I guess, what will be our fifth year with the show, which is astonishing to me that we've been continuing this every week for that long. But it's been a great joy to be a part of this, and actually I'm very pleased today to have with me to kick off this year two young gentlemen I met a while back when I was at East Tennessee State University. I guess we were welcoming a new dean. Is that the correct term, Matt?
Yep, correct.
And Anthony, yeah. So anyway, we're having a conversation there, and I thought it would be a good idea to have you guys on the show. And by the way, for the audience's information, the guests today are Matt Linvall and Anthony Suttle, who own and operate a company called Peak Geomatics in Johnson City, Tennessee. For those of you who don't know where Johnson City, Tennessee is, it's just across the Virginia Tennessee border along Interstate 81 and where Interstate 81 and 40 join as 40 goes west and 81 goes south. What is it, about 20-some miles from the state line down to where you guys are?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we're probably 20 miles from Tennessee, 20 miles from North Carolina, and 20 miles from Virginia.
So that means you probably need to be able to provide services in all those locations.
Absolutely. And well, one of the first things I just want to say here, so the radio show has been on for 5 years, and 5 years ago I was still a student at East Tennessee State University pursuing my bachelor's degree in land surveying. So I'm glad to be a part of it now, absolutely. And I tell you, we found this area to be full of passionate surveyors, young and old alike, and I'm just happy to be here. So thanks for having us on, Kirk.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys on, too. And the fact that 5-year time frame has a lot to do with being on the show, actually, because we as a profession, out of necessity, for one thing, but also out of strong interest, is beginning to focus more on our young surveyors and to perpetuate the profession. We've sort of been living in a, I don't know what the right terminology is, a dream world maybe, in terms of the profession as it moves ahead, and we spent a lot of time not recognizing that we were all getting older. And as you guys know, I talk about this on the show a lot, the average age of the licensee these days is probably upper 50s somewhere. So it's with a lot of interest that the professional associations, the state associations, national association, and surveyors in general are very sensitive to the fact that we continue to create a crop of young, well-educated, well-informed, motivated surveyors who are coming along, because one of the things we're not sure about is how many are we going to need in the future, mm-hmm. just because of technology, and, you know, how many can survive in the future for some of the same reasons. And again, that's part of why I wanted to have you guys on the show, because of your schooling at East Tennessee State. So maybe a good way to start for you guys, and I'll start with Matt, and then we'll get with Anthony and talk a little bit about how you got here. One of the things I want to talk about today is your path from when you decided you thought you might want to do this. Some people sort of discover that almost inadvertently sometimes, but just how your thought process got you to going to school at East Tennessee State and then into the profession itself. And, of course, Matt, with you, I'm not sure, did your economics degree come before the surveying? I assume it did.
Yes, it did. Yeah. So, you know, I had gone to college, got an economics degree, and been in the workforce and in different various financial sectors, but just was not, I knew there was more out there. I wanted to utilize higher mathematics and science, but I wanted to be able to remove myself from a desk from time to time. And so I literally, you know, thought of professions that involve outdoor and indoor work, but still have, you know, the mental, you know, catalyst and excitement that comes from problem solving. And just looked through history, and I found, of course, I've always been a fan of Lewis and Clark and Thomas Jefferson, and I basically decided I wanted to become a land surveyor. I actually pursued, I had a couple options. You know, I could have, even at that time, done the 10-year route or whatever it's called, where you just, you know, work underneath somebody for 10 years. I could have also just taken a few classes, since I already had a degree, and sit for my practice exam. But I chose to pursue a full-year degree, and East Tennessee State University is one of the, you know, there's not many out there that have a full bachelor's degree in land surveying, so I moved up here, went to school, graduated, and moved on. And I can't tell you how important I feel it is for me to have that bachelor's degree under my belt as a land surveyor and as a business owner. I just felt that it was the right way to go because, it was an investment in myself, right? So I had to put in time, money, and effort. And I think that mindset is a plus. I mean, when you want to become a professional, right, you want to invest in yourself. You want to surround yourself with similar professionals. And I felt like going through the route of actually getting the bachelor's degree, yeah, in that manner would be beneficial for me, and it certainly has. I mean, it's I can now move to Anthony as a perfect example. We met due to our involvement with the university after graduation, as far as trying to become mentors, and since then we've partnered up and have started a successful business. So,
just that's a couple of thoughts. Just a couple of thoughts before we go to Anthony. One is, I'm going to assume that economics degree has been useful because people always tell us as surveyors that we don't understand economics well enough to stay in business. So I've got to assume that was a good thing. And then the second thing, I guess, was since your economics degree is from SMU, did you grow up in Texas?
No, I was. I've kind of traveled all over the place. So I was born in Minnesota, but I've lived in Minnesota, Illinois, Arkansas, Texas, North Carolina, and Costa Rica, and then Tennessee. So, I've been blessed with being able to experience a lot of different cultures and places, and take all those experiences with me. And to go back to the economics degree, absolutely. I mean, I agree. And this is kind of something I'll circle back around to later if we have time. Is land surveyors, and Anthony and I talk about this often. You know, we're peak geomatics. Okay, we're not Anthony and Matt Land Surveying Incorporated. There are so many other things out there that we can do as professionals that don't require our stamp and our seal. And so we want a broad base of business, not just stuff that only surveyors can do, but something that we could do probably better than somebody who doesn't have a license, but we could still do it better, more accurate, and more efficiently. And even running a business. I mean, it is impressive. Well, it's impressive that there's a lot of small surveying companies out there, but it's also a little bit scary sometimes because I feel like so many of these smaller businesses could be doing so much better financially, and hiring more staff. I'd love to see. I know how things are progressing towards one-man surveying shops with reflective lifts, robotics, and GPS. But still, if you're busier and you expanded your base, your business base of your customers and your clients and what you can and can't do, I think it would just be better for the whole profession as a whole to maintain those efficiencies, but just to make the pie bigger, hire more young people who are pursuing these kind of degrees, and spread the wealth, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think it's important to hear this kind of message from guys like you guys because one of the big dilemmas that we have in the profession that I see is perhaps because of our own background, and they're variant, of course. I mean, people always have different backgrounds on how they got somewhere. But we don't seem to be as good as we should be at presenting our profession to young people in a way that will get them excited about being part of it. And that's one of the reasons I'm kind of excited about this whole young surveyor thing, because if that message can come from guys like you who are obviously a lot closer in age to the people we're trying to attract, then I think that can be really helpful to us. But just all the things that you said about expanding your business and looking at it from the economic side and not just saying, I do this one thing and nothing else, that makes a lot of sense to me. It also makes a lot of sense from the perspective of, for lack of a better term, selling the profession to the next generation.
Absolutely. I mean, Anthony and I go to the university. We volunteer there. We teach a couple classes, do some after some events with the surveying club, and you know we try to bring. I mean, and you know, well, obviously the results will be judged by themselves. But we try to bring that excitement and passion, and I think that's also key, though, right? So we're actually going to the university, which goes back to my point of these are people who are investing in their profession already. Right, they're not getting paid to be a rodman all year, and then 10 years later get applied for the license. They are actually investing the time, so they have that. They have some of that mindset already. That self determination that I'm going to invest my time and my effort and my money into this. But when we go there and we show them fun and new exciting things, right? And we show them things that they can do even beyond what the classes cover. You know, the classes will cover stuff that's on the licensing exam and whatnot. But there's so much more that land surveyors can do, but we don't. And I think that's part of the key part of getting the younger folks involved and excited about it is saying, you know, all these new technologies, whether it's an indoor 3D laser scanner that you can hold in your hand that costs $5,000 or a new fixed wing drone that's going to give topo and volumetric measurements, you know, as long as we can still focus on these new technologies that are coming up, get them excited about, you know, acting as a surveyor and doing that problem solving, and show the potential for growth as a professional and as a business, I'm hopeful we can convey that message. And Anthony's done a good job of that too. He's probably the most vocal advocate for a four-year degree being the path to go for the betterment of our profession, and I couldn't agree more with him.
Since we only have a half a minute or so before we go to the first break, I'll wait to bring Anthony in to talk about his perspective on this. One of the things, though, that is of interest to me, you were talking about going back to the school. Do you all get opportunities to get into high schools very much?
We do occasionally. What we do is the high school will bring students to the college campus for like a career fair kind of day.
I see.
We will set up and we'll set up a tripod and we'll show a fly through video of a 3D laser scan that we've done in an underground mine or something like that.
We need to take our first break, Matt, so let's do that real quick.
Okay. You got it.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com. The pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, folks, to our show today with Matt Linball and Anthony Suttle. We're talking about peak geomatics, but we're also talking in general about the surveying profession and what that means beyond just what some people tend to think that it means, which is we do land boundaries only, which is obviously not the case. So, Anthony, we've heard about Matt's path to get to where you guys are now. Obviously, did you grow up there close to the school, or where are your roots?
Yeah, I'm local to West North Carolina and East Tennessee. I've lived on both sides of the mountain, and I graduated from a school in Greene County, Tennessee, just about an hour away from ETSU.
So, what drew you to the school?
Well, my parents were in the restaurant business. They owned five McDonald's, and I kind of thought that was the career path that I was going to take, too. But my mom insisted that I go to college, thank God. And I looked and through college catalogs, and I love hiking and being in the mountains, and I thought that's all surveyors did, so I signed up for classes at ETSU to become a land surveyor, kind of as more of a backup to my plans on taking over my dad's business. But after getting involved with it, I become passionate about it and decided that that's what I wanted to do as a career long term.
Well, I guess taking over ownership of five McDonald's is not a bad fallback plan.
No. it wasn't, but I've seen a path for me to kind of be my own man's man and not under the shadow of my father, and they encouraged that, so that was the path, I decided to go down. And also, I didn't like the idea of having, 200 employees. Having two or three employees sounded much better.
Yeah, and I can understand that part of it for sure, because I've been in situations where those numbers have been varied back and forth from only a few to a lot, and there's no question that the more you have, and trying to understand all their motivations and that kind of thing are part of it as well. And of course, now I didn't follow my dad's footsteps in his business either. My dad was a minister, so my motivations were perhaps different. Not that there's anything wrong with ministry; it's just that perhaps I wasn't suited as well for it. But
yeah, and I think my dad also liked the idea about maybe coming into work for me one day as a surveyor.
Get away from it all.
Yeah, which he actually has. He got out of the business and comes out with me every once in a while. So I think he's very excited about my choice of career.
One of the things you guys were talking about, the school itself, and I know the program there has done well. And did, from your introduction to it, to what you're seeing now, because I know you're really active going back and doing things with the students, do you see any change much in the focus, or I guess I'm just curious about, has the program evolved, so to speak, if that's a good term?
Yeah, well, there's definitely been some change due to staff turnover and also the economy, the role it's played with affecting surveying community in general. There's been lower numbers in attendance, which is definitely open people's eyes that it's not something that's rock solid and always going to be there if we don't work hard to promote it and make sure that we're relevant. So we've been trying to do that or help in any way we can, because the idea of the program being healthy and continue to put out like-minded surveyors is extremely important to us.
Well, I would add.
Go ahead, Matt.
Sorry, I would add that one of the benefits of staying near the university, as far as operating a business here, is we've been able to get involved with the advisory committee. So even the last 5 years, I mean, we have seen changes that we, that, you know, the committee has recommended. This is a group of, oh, maybe a half a dozen or 10, 12 surveyors who volunteer their time, effort, and a lot of times money to advise the university on, you know, what changes are coming in the surveying profession. And a lot of these folks do hire graduates, so they'll get to experience how these graduates work and, you know, maybe point out a couple things that they'd like to see improvements on. So, yeah, the program does go through it. It's good that this program is not a rigid, you know, set outline of what's been happening and here's what's going to happen. And they're very open to adjusting the curriculum, of course, within the certain standards that they have to do to remain certified by ABET, the board that certifies the university. But, so they have been flexible on it. You know, faculty and staff, that changes, and, you know, that's, you know, that kind of thing is beyond the control of any of the advisory board committee members. But we'd like to see the enrollment bigger. I mean, you know, we want to get more students into surveying who want to be in surveying. And, you know, we are definitely an advocate for this route being the best route, not only for the individual seeking to become a land surveyor, but for the clients of the land surveyor, whether it's the guy who needs a fence staked or an Alta on a, you know, commercial building, or the volumetric measurements with the drone, whatever it may be. This route is going to be the best for the profession overall. We're going to raise the standards of the people who are involved in this business, whether or not they use their stamp at the end of the day. We want them to be, you know, prepared to work and to do honest, ethical, and the best work they can. I think ETSU and some of the other programs out there are best suited to prepare them for that.
Is the school able to do all the lab work on campus? I know some schools utilize some of the local survey population sometimes, and sometimes they're students who are not resident students necessarily, but is that program set up to do that kind of thing, or is it?
Yes, they have a tremendous amount of equipment. They have their own GPS and their own robotics, and you know, and all the traditional equipment too. They have their own labs, but we also they pull in surveyors from around the community to come and assist and help out, and we always you know, enjoy doing that.
And in addition to that, they actually have distance learning, right? So you don't actually have to come to campus all the time. There's web classes you can have. If you live in Memphis but you want to take a class, you can have a local land surveyor, you know, sponsor you, do the lab work. I mean, there is a tremendous flexibility as far as, you know, taking these courses for people, not just, you know, around here, but around the state or even around the country.
Yeah, that makes it really flexible. And one of the other things that the school does, and I guess all schools are kind of doing this now, but this school, if my memory is correct, was set up specifically to do this back when Ben Buckner and all those guys first got involved, and that was to be a regional school. You know, the whole idea back when we were trying to figure out how to get enough surveying education available to everybody, the concept was, well, maybe we need to do regional schools, because are you really going to have enough student population to be a one-state school or a one-area school? And this one was set up with, I don't know what the technical term is, to bring kids in from all the surrounding states at state tuition.
That's
and,
right.
Not all the schools are set up that way, but this one was. And it's been interesting to kind of watch as this whole educational thing has evolved. And sometimes it's almost parochial in people's thinkings that if we don't have a school in our state, then it's not, you know, we don't want to have to send students somewhere else. But I'm not convinced that in the long run we're not going to end up with schools like you guys have that draw from a number of states. And granted, you're in a good location, being so close to so many states.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the general way to go too. Is you know, increased distance learning through the internet. You know, even here, I've taken courses when I was in school here, you know, from my living room that were, you know, equal as being in the class as far as the webinars and everything going. And we really, you know, it's a regional school. I would love for it to be,
even bigger than that. I mean, you know, to have a school that has the resources and the support that, that ETSU has, that offers a bachelor's degree in land surveying, I mean, my personal thought is, you know, we should all be lifting this thing up on its shoulders, with the understanding that it's got to do its own work. You know, we don't want to support something that's not going to work. But I believe with the support of surveyors and you know, nationally, we can make the 4-year degree something that's going to be so attractive that the schools should increase enrollment and produce better surveyors.
Yeah, there's no question.
It's pretty easy for someone like me who's out of high school to, you know, move out of state to go to school. But like, you know, Matt's example of, you know, finding surveying later on in life and moving his family is definitely a lot more of a sacrifice. And that's probably something that we need to continue to try to make available to folks where they can, you know, be a part of the degree and the university without having to uproot their family, so to speak.
Yeah, and I really think the schools that are out there, and there are a lot of schools around the country, and you know, I think we have 28 or so that are ABET accredited. That includes some 2-year degree schools, but the mm-hmm. number altogether is, you know, approaching 30. But I think everybody's kind of looking that way just because of the technology that makes it available, and for the convenience that you were talking about, and not having to uproot, so to speak, to pursue something. Because one of the things I hear here more often than I ever thought I would were telephone calls from people who are doing something else for a living, who, for whatever reason, have gotten interested in the surveying profession, and then, well, what do I need to do? You know, what do I have to do mm-hmm. to get to where I want to be? Can I just go out and buy some equipment and go to work tomorrow, or, you know, what do I do? And so being able to provide that distance learning application is very helpful sometimes in helping to get people in. And I'm looking at my watch here, and I see we're half a minute away from the end of our second segment. So when we get back, I want to talk, or have you guys talk about some of the things that you're doing and that you've been able to do because of your background, because of the work you put in, because of your education. And you touched on this earlier in terms of, you know, what can we do in our business that may or may not require our seal, but is still part of the overall profession that we're in, and in particular as relates to new technologies, because I think that is such an important element that you all seem to have a really good grasp on. So let's go to the second break, and we'll be back shortly.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstedt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
back for our third segment, our very interesting conversation with Matt Lindblom and Anthony Suttle regarding their business in Johnson City. And we haven't talked a whole lot about your business. We've talked more about the profession and your path, and it's been a really great discussion. I want to pursue your business itself as we move forward for the next couple of segments. Before we do that, though, it's the time of the show where we have our Parker Davis Quick Stakes competition every week. And our regular listeners know that the first person to email the answer that's given by the guest to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com will be our winner for the day. So I'm going to give you a really hard question to answer, and whatever answer you give will be the answer for the quiz today. So what does ETSU stand for?
That is East Tennessee State University.
East Tennessee State University. That's the answer we're looking for. Thanks for participating in our contest today. I really appreciate that. In some of our preliminary conversations and in our beginning of the show today, you guys were talking about diversity in terms of what you provide and how, if I'm understanding correctly, the ability to have that diversity beyond just what the license says you can do is part of what has driven your business and driven you to get into the business. So talk to us about some of the things that you guys are doing, traditional and non-traditional.
Okay, I'll go with this for a second, Matt, if that's all right. So, you know, we've been in business for about 4 months together, and I've been running my own surveying business before for a couple of years, just as a sole proprietor. And, you know, we've never experienced a robust economy as young professionals. And because of that, I guess we've had to be a little bit creative in the way we've been planning our business and looking forward to, you know, potential work. So we've been doing traditional surveying, but we've been working hard at just trying to find other avenues to get new clients.
Yeah, and I would add, I mean, for me, the things that I'm excited about that are upcoming, that are outside the realm of the normal, I've got to stamp this map with my seal and date it, are things like 3D imaging. You know, like I said, we gave an example earlier about somebody needs a plumbing problem done, and you could sit there and image, you know, the pipes, whether it's for an Alta or even just, not even not for an Alta, but just for some information. You know, there's a lot of information that people need, but they don't need the kind of accuracies that we are accustomed to producing. Okay, so we could still produce really accurate maps, drawings, schematics, or whatever it may be, but they don't have to be survey grade. You know, with the advent of GIS, you know, another part that we're interested in is utilizing drones for, you know, we call it surveying, but we'll call it mapping in general. Volumetric calculations of, you know, Bob's timber down there. How much wood did he get off? You know, agriculture, where are the spots that are a little bit low and need to be filled and leveled? I had a daydream the other day of doing a topo map of somebody's property. This is, you know, we have a lot of people come up here from Florida and down from New York and buy retirement properties, and they just want to get a picture of their land. Well, you know, we could get to the point where we could get a 3D printer and actually produce an exact, you know, replica of this person's property and hand them a 3D model of their own property on there. You know, there's just a million things that are going to be coming up that we don't even know about yet, but that we could do better than other people but don't require our stamp. And I think, you know, in order to get the young people involved, increase their professionalism, and you know, maintaining that understanding and of course knowledge of how to do a boundary survey and, you know, how to resolve conflicts, you know, dispute resolution. But there are going to be just a mountain of things that we can do as surveyors better than other people can, even if we're not using our stamp. And I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I would like realtors, for example, to you know, when they first
list a property to think, well, we need to call Peak Geomatics because they're going to make sure this property is, you know, surveyed, so we'll have a fresh survey, but they'll also take photographs for us. They're going to do, they're going to help us out with our marketing work up front. Whatever we can do to make ourselves relevant and for people to need our services, that would typically maybe only call us up unless they have a problem, is, you know, the typical reason someone's calling a surveyor up is because, oh my goodness, we have some kind of boundary issue. We're trying to close on this property Monday. Can you, could you be out here yesterday? I'd like to be busy, you know, working for people on the front end because they think of us first and not last.
Yeah, that's an age-old dilemma of the surveyor as it relates to real property. And the sale of real property. You know, we're closing at 2 this afternoon. Can you get us a survey by 1 o'clock? And that's kind of the way it's been. But one of the things that you were talking about in terms of being part of that whole process and the fact that you guys are interested in, and I want to hear about your experiences so far with the UAV deal, that's a great opportunity to help people market because my understanding is, and I'm not an expert in this, although we've done a few shows on UAVs, but I would assume that even now you could, at in a particular location, at a particular altitude, you could be up there taking pictures that could be instrumental to help people sell or develop property just by seeing what it looks like, not necessarily knowing the absolute details about it in terms of, you know, accurate contours and all that kind of thing. But I'm really interested in what y'all have been doing with that and where you see it going.
Well, yeah, we do, you know, we individually, we own drones and we operate them recreationally. We have not actually done anything commercial. You know, we're a little bit wary of the, you know, the situation as far as the regulations and laws go. When that spigot is turned on, we will be prepared to be on the front end of it. And that includes having conversations with developers, having conversations now with developers, realtors, even property owners, you know, people who've got some large tracts. You know, we proactively, you know, visit them and say, hey, you know, there's going to come a time when, you know, the economy is going to be back to where it used to be or, you know, similar or maybe better. And you're going to want to pass this property on, and, you know, we can help you with that. You know, like Anthony pointed out, that's the same conversation that's been had a million times. We want to be there on the front end. And I think with the, you know, the drone use, whether it's imagery, video, near-infrared, all the different things we can do with that, I believe if we are proactive about that, this may be one of those true turning points that we can make ourselves, you know, to the position we've always wanted to be, which is on the front end of things, out there helping at the outset before stuff happens, and then we get all the work in between. So I mean, we're trying it in with traditional surveying, all the way through, you know, marketing the product before it goes for sale, surveying the boundaries, cutting it up, and then producing a product on the tail end that's much better than they've gotten before. You know, you're not just getting a piece of paper; you're getting, you know, a zip drive full of beautiful photos that have been ortho-mosaiced together, and you're getting copies of, you know, all kinds of different reports and soils. I mean, there's just, it is really, really exciting. We're very anxious for there to be more concrete rules that we can actually fold some of this personal use into our business.
Yeah, supposedly with some of these exemptions that the FAA has issued recently, the prospects of that advancement, I assume, are going to be enhanced by the work that the folks are going to be doing in developing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some of that's already happening through universities, I think. I know I had a guest on the show a while back who his company owned a UAV and had, I guess, put it on loan or something to a local university, and they've been able to do those kind of things already, it appears. So hopefully not too far down the road, those applications will be established, and the capability to do them will be out there. I guess you're probably not going to get in the business of delivering UPS packages with your drone. But
No. We'll see how well it pays.
See how it turns out as we go along, I guess. You mentioned go ahead.
Oh, I just was going to say a negative aspect to this drone business and the regulations is there's a lot of non-professionals. I mean, photographers. Well, I guess they're, you know, professional photographers. They're getting paid for it. But anyway, people are non-licensed. They're actually using drones commercially all around us in our local area, and it's a area of frustration due to the fact that they're in a way getting a jump on us because they're not regulated and to the sense that we are, they're able to, you know, provide a lot of this photographs. And if you look at realtors' websites, a lot of them are using this data from, you know, just Jimbo or whoever has a drone and a nice camera to market some of their properties.
Mm-hmm. Whereas we're more fearful to do that because we are, you know, bound by, you know, our own ethics and standards as licensed professionals in the states that we are licensed in. So it's frustrating. We're anxious to move this discussion forward onto, you know, true practical use, and we, you know, and show people what we can do better than other people can, because we have, you know, the foundation of a bachelor's degree, experience as land surveyors and licensed team.
Well, and plus,
yeah,
you
absolutely,
you have an understanding of the data,
yeah,
and how it relates to people's use of their land. So, I mean, that obviously is an advantage, and I understand the difficulty, though, because it's always been that way in the surveying profession and others as well. To be, as you said, in some ways you almost feel constrained where other people don't have their license to worry about. But there's always been that issue of, hey, we do that. How come somebody else gets to do it and isn't held accountable for what they do? There's always that kind of thing. And so when we're almost to the next break. So when we get back, I have a few more questions about the things you guys are doing, and then I'm really interested in your perspective on the future, because surveyors have always, I guess, in the back of their mind worried about the future, what's going on, but probably never more so than now. And so in your position as young surveyors, I'm really interested in your perspective. So let's do our last break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Rinaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on americaswebradio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back with Matt Linvall and Anthony Suttle today, and a very interesting conversation about your paths to starting your business. And I didn't realize that you, the two of you, had only been together such a short period of time. I knew I'd met you both and talked to you before, but didn't know that you officially had only been together a relatively short period of time. So that's even more interesting to me, that to see your enthusiasm and your and looking at your website. You got a really cool website, by the way. That you've worked on that, and maybe this is a good time to jump into that conversation about the future. And we had a little bit of discussion about that during the break, but if you share that with the audience, your enthusiasm for moving ahead.
Yeah, well, I would say, yeah, definitely. I mean, we are not worried at all about the future. We are excited about the future. And I think a lot of that has to do with, well, the amount of information that we take in. We are, you know, voracious readers of information, whether it's from a surveying company in Australia or New Zealand. You know, the amount of things that are changing fast over on the other side of the pond is maybe is incredible. You know, we're active in the FIG, Federation of International Geomatics. We read GIM magazine. You know, we stay active even in our local level here. And you know, our activities that we have with local surveyors and those we've never met, you know, whether they're in Africa or wherever they may be, that inspires us every day to know that there is so much more out there that can be done by us as individuals and as a profession. And I would say we're excited about the changes, you know, drones, everything, mapping in 3D is the new frontier. You know, it'd be great. I'd be excited if we ever did another 2D map ever. I just think 3D is the way to go. It's more information. It's easy to interpret. It's a lot easier to present now with 3D PDFs or 3D imaging or 3D printer. So for me, I feel like we are going nowhere but up in as far as what we're going to experience in the different kinds of surveying that we're going to be conducting here in the next, you know, 20, 25 years.
I guess it's kind of scary to folks because data collection is getting easier and easier and easier, and that might make them feel that, well, if anybody can use their cell phone to measure and get all this information, you know, where's that going to leave me? But, you know, I view myself as a land surveyor as being special because I can actually do something with it and make all that data, you know, applicable to real life or whatever you're wanting to do with it. You know, I feel like people are going to still need me to interpret it for them.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great approach to take. Rather than being afraid of it, you are afraid of what somebody else might do with it. You can actually provide a professional service to people that's more meaningful than anybody else can. So that obviously makes a lot of difference. One of the things you guys mentioned a while ago was the dispute resolution, and that kind of rang a bell with me, because in a few weeks I'm actually going to have a group of people on the radio show talking about the concept of actually legislation that would allow surveyors to actually be dispute resolution experts in terms of working out the situation with people. So many times now, the surveyors, and our buddy Jeff Lucas talks about this all the time, you know, the surveyor is viewed as the guy who uncovers the problem but never has an answer. It's just, well, here's what I found out, you know, go sue your neighbor or whatever. And this concept is actually being laid out in Washington right now with a different group, but the idea is bringing surveyors into that same realm is setting surveyors up as actual mediators for dispute resolution because of the knowledge of the issue that surveyors know that not even people in the courts themselves very often understand. And I guess that's leads to one of my questions, which is, I don't know if you've been to court on any of these issues or not, but a lot of times these things get resolved by folks who really don't know what the information is about. I mean, they know the law, obviously, but they don't necessarily understand the ramifications of everything. And I was just curious, in your dispute resolution experiences if you've run into that, or what's your thoughts about this idea of surveyors being mediators?
Oh, well, absolutely. I think it'd be wonderful because, you know, when you go to court, things get so convoluted because it's mixed in with all kind of other testimony about, you know, what people think and what they saw and this and that, that when it's left up to the judge to go back and look through, you know, yards and yards of paperwork 6 months later, you wonder if the key points that you and the other surveyor were trying to present really stuck, or if they got convoluted, you know, even trying to convey that information to the lawyer. And it's almost heartbreaking to see people go through litigation and spend so much money on things that you know you could just help them and coach them on how to work with their neighbor. And a lot of people, I think a lot of surveyors would be much more willing to do that if they didn't feel like they were stepping into, you know, muddy water by giving illegal advice. That's the way I feel. I'm always apprehensive to, you know, really tell anybody anything other than, you know, this is my opinion of the boundary lines, because I'm afraid that I'm going to be considered giving legal advice to either my client or whoever.
Yeah, well, Go ahead.
Well, I would say for me, you know, at the beginning of this conversation, we talked about why I became a land surveyor. I said problem solving. I enjoy being faced with issues that, you know, they're difficult to solve or haven't been solved before. They can require detailed analysis and massaging and whatnot. And absolutely, we should become, you know, as long as, you know, we won't get in trouble for it, of course, involved in dispute resolution. We should be out there solving problems, not creating problems. And at this point, I'm with Anthony. I mean, we've seen it time and time again where we feel like we've developed a relationship with both parties, right? And we could probably come up with a solution that would be equitable or at least agreeable. But our, you know, as of now, our hands are pretty much tied as far as what we can do. And yeah, I think that is an awesome service that we could offer our clients if it comes to fruition.
Yeah, and hopefully it will. I know that exact thing that you just mentioned is the whole background for this concept that we're going to be discussing in a few weeks. And like I said, the current application of it isn't for surveyors, but it could be extended to that. But it's all about that. And remember earlier in our conversation, I said early in my life it was determined that I wasn't going to go into the business my dad was in, which was being a minister. But the background in my life that came about because of that experience is one of the things that I liked about surveying, because it was another way to help people solve their problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And to me, that's the most intriguing thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, problems exist between properties and boundaries. And gosh, what a good feeling it would be when you can go out there and resolve something for somebody. You know, having the knowledge, being here locally, you know, knowing the terrain, interpreting the deeds and saying, look, this is probably the best we're going to get it. That'd be fantastic. That's very satisfying. And it's often that, you know, properties, especially in our area, in rural mountainous, you know, remote areas, it's great. You know, when you're trying to retrace the agreement line between Joe and Bob in 1920, and that's the only way it was ever described, and then the new owners are not in agreement of where that was, it's, you know, it limits you. But if you were able to kind of coach them on coming up with an agreement, and I guess we sometimes get the opportunity to do that with boundary line agreements, but you know, actually having some authority to help mediate would be tremendous.
Yeah, and you know, all of that is one of the things that surveyors get involved in almost every day, and you're right there with the people. That's one of the beauties of it, is that you, mm-hmm. you actually mm-hmm. are mm-hmm. engaged with the people, and so I would agree that's something that would be of interest moving ahead. And speaking of moving ahead, we've got about 3 minutes left in the show, so any thoughts either of you might have in terms of where we're headed?
Well, I thought about this the other day. We were
was flying my drone just for fun, and I said, you know, I was thinking maybe we should come up with a new company logo when this all gets sorted out. And I thought, well, not a logo, but a saying. And I thought, well, how about boots on the ground and eyes in the sky? I said, that'll get it covered.
You have your slogan all set.
Yeah. But we'll discuss that, Anthony, later.
Yeah, I suppose so. But, you know, getting back to that dispute resolution, I really think sometimes our absolute focus on precise measurement gets in the way of solving the problem.
Yeah.
Because it's too easy to rely only on the fact that we measure precisely and not focus on, you know, what was the real intent here, what was actually trying to be resolved.
We spend a lot of time talking about the exciting, you know, part of new methods of surveying and collecting data, but that's really where me and Matt's passion lies, getting out here and just trying to find, you know, the old corners and doing boundary retracement surveys. I mean, that's what we really get excited about doing, and you're right. You know, measurement is just a key part of it.
That's the kind of attitude that the old people like me like to hear from the younger generation, is that attitude, because it is so critical. And having said that, we got a minute and a half or so to go, so I really want to thank you guys for being with me today. I know when we first talked last summer, I was really excited about getting you to come on the show, and it's been a great to have a conversation with you and hear how your paths have taken you where you've gone and where you're moving ahead. And I guess now that we know your background, we know that if surveying does go the way of the doo-doo bird, then Matt can be an economist and Anthony can run McDonald's. So, but nevertheless, I don't see that happening with you two because of your attitudes. And good luck with the business and with your continued involvement at East Tennessee State. I think that's a major element in keeping those programs vibrant, is having people like you guys continue to go back and work with the students and with the professors to keep those programs alive and well. So,
thank you, Kurt, for having us on and for showing your support in so many ways for both the university and the profession. You know, it's conversations like this that we have with different generations that keep us excited about what can happen here, and that, you know, it's going to work.
That's a perfect
Absolutely.
Way for us
thanks.
To end. That intergenerational correspondence is so important. So thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.